You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to field your questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. With me today is Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's my opportunity to field questions with the capable help and participation of Layla Mutin, who is a repository of information about nutrition. And together, hopefully, we form one sentient being. Right?
We try.
I need a lifeline from time to time, and you're my lifeline. Do I get a lifeline on that question? Yes, indeed. Here's your lifeline. You get one lifeline. Okay, so we're going to be answering your questions momentarily. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. Let's talk for a minute about the dietary guidelines for America. Dietary guidelines for America are reformulated every 5 years. And recently, the committee that formulates these dietary guidelines, it consists of 20 luminaries from the field of nutrition, and they establish guidelines which Americans are supposed to follow. And so far, these dietary guidelines have been controversial and rather disappointing from our standpoint, because they continue to be obsolete. They continue to suggest that we should be making sure that we take the skin off our chicken, that we consume minimal amounts of red meat, that we avoid high-fat dairy and use substitutes for butter. Et cetera, et cetera.
And use vegetable oils.
Yeah. And use vegetable oils in lieu of shortenings, so-called shortenings that are high in saturated fats. Again and again, they've been beating that drum. Meanwhile, Americans have been getting sicker and sicker. So fast forward to the present. Last month, they convened the nutrition experts tasked with crafting the guidelines, consisting of 20 academics, rendered their verdict last month. And once again, they failed the American public because they whiffed on the issue of ultra-processed foods. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that ultra-processed foods, shorthand UPFs, are bad for us, right? So what's the holdup? What's the holdup?
Well, a lot of those, the members who sit on that advisory board are also from big food and big agriculture.
Indeed.
So it is the fox guarding the hen house yet again. And the biggest lobbyists next to the pharmaceutical industry are big food, big agriculture. So that's, they're touting all of that, you know, eat your whole grain and your whole grain cereal and your breads and all of that. And, you know, it's terrible.
And this what you're enunciating is not merely a conspiracy theory. You know, sometimes we say, oh, you know, the people that we disagree with are corrupt. But there's actually a report a study which is entitled Conflicts of Interest for Members of the U.S. 2020 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, the last iteration before this present iteration. And what they found is, and I'm quoting, I believe this is from, if let me just check. This is from, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the source, where the journal published this. And it takes a minute for my computer to show this, but I'll read you the quote. Our analysis found that 95% of the committee members had conflicts of interest with the food and or pharmaceutical industries, and that particular actors, including Kellogg, Abbott, Kraft,
yes.
Mead Johnson, mm-hmm. General Mills, Danone, and the International Life Sciences Committee, otherwise known as ILSI, which is an industrial front for debunking what they call junk science in an effort to undermine conclusions about the harmful effects of foods and chemicals, that these committee members had connections with multiple members. Research funding and membership of an advisory executive board jointly accounted for more than 60% of the total number of conflicts of interest documented. In other words, they, were on advisory or executive boards of these big companies. And their conclusion is the trustworthy dietary guidelines result from a transparent, objective, and science-based process. Our analysis has shown that the significant and widespread conflicts of interest on the committee prevent the dietary guidelines for America from achieving the recommended standard for transparency without mechanisms in place to make this information publicly available. That information comes to us from the journal Public Health Nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This effort
about the whole dietary guidelines looking for more transparency, this all started. It was started by the National Academy of Sciences in 2017.
Uh-huh.
You think they would have gotten it right by now?
No.
To increase transparency and manage the bias. But they found that all of these conflicts of interest still exist.
I'll tell you how they are blocking this this initiative to make ultra-processed foods a culprit in our food supply. The reason that they're doing it is because of kind of analysis paralysis. They say, well, there's not enough evidence. Definition of ultra-processed foods is kind of vague because there are some ultra-processed foods that are really healthy, even though they're ultra-processed. And I think what they're referring to is ultra-processed foods like the Impossible Burger. That's going to be a really healthy, it's ultra-processed, but it's super healthy because it's, low in saturated fat.
It's meat-free.
And and they say also it's bad for poor people because poor people buy these foods. They're very economical. Their poor people will be stigmatized because the foods that they eat, they won't have access to those foods. They'll be more expensive. They'll be taxed, blah, blah, blah. I'm actually reading, there are major disinformation efforts that are sponsored by the food industry to push back on any kind of restriction of ultra-processed foods. And other countries have adopted some of these restrictions. For example, in the UK, you can't advertise, high-calorie junk food past a certain time at night, which is precisely the time that people call DoorDash. Also, there's strict labeling in countries like Chile and now in Mexico. And it's just a response to the soaring obesity rate and disease rate caused by these things. The latest studies show that UPFs are associated with 32 different diseases, but especially cardiometabolic diseases associated with obesity and diabetes. There's also some evidence that they actually affect the process of aging per se, that they actually accelerate aging. Ultra-processed foods now comprise 2/3 of the calories in children and teen diets.
You didn't know it?
They now are associated with accelerated biological aging and inflammatory bowel disease has now been linked to consumption of ultra-processed foods. So,
oh yeah.
So, you know, here's the thing. They're having trouble with the definition of ultra-processed foods. I hearken back to Supreme Court Justice Potter. He famously once said, when asked about the definition of obscenity, he said that I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
Quite simply. And, you know, because otherwise, you know, how are you going to define? I mean, this is analysis paralysis. We know that UPFs are bad for us. What's the holdup? You know, let's make America healthy again.
They're just dragging their feet. They're dragging their feet as much as possible just to toe the line with the lobbyists, with special interests. And this is some of the stuff now with the new administration, God willing, that's all going to stop.
Hopefully.
We hope.
Hopefully. I just think that the forces at play here, the multi-billion and even trillion-dollar industries that hold sway over us, the pharmaceutical industry, the chemical industry, the food industry, big agriculture, the DuPonts of the world, that they have such tremendous influence that it's really going to be hard to push back against their pervasive inroads. But, you know, we got to try. We got
to
try because it's an existential problem. I mean, I think it's as big a problem, and I think an even more immediate and threatening problem than climate change. Climate change is on the horizon. There's no question that climate is changing. Is it, you know, the debate is about to what extent it's man-made. The debate is to what extent we can do something about it. But when it comes to undermining our health, the most immediate threat is our food supply and our the chemicalization of not only our foods, but our water, our air, and our soil. And, you know, the good news is we're going to platform that in this current administration via the inference of RFK Jr., you know, like him or not. You know, he may not agree with this entire platform, but they're going to give him and, you know, his acolytes some sway in making some policy for this administration, which is great, which, I mean, ultimately, the people in previous administrations under Democratic administrations, it's interesting. I mean, they're very much pro-environment and da-da-da-da-da. Have we made much progress under that regime? Not really.
No.
Yeah.
And it's time to dig out of all of this muck, honestly. Too much greed, too much special interest, all at the expense of the public's health. And as more and more people are waking up, really waking up to how they'd been disenfranchised as well, and that they'd been sold a bill of goods, or this is healthy to eat, this is, give this to your kid. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I mean, you have the Kelce brothers, you know, like America's heroes, you know, Taylor Swift's main squeeze, and his brother endorsing a cereal line of, you know, highly processed, and talk about ultra-processed foods, laden with sugar, laden with artificial colorings. Why?
Yeah.
To make a lot of money? I mean, just is it worth it? I mean,
Really? Honestly? You don't make enough money?
Last I heard, you know, playing professional football, you know, you make tens and tens of millions of dollars. But it's not enough.
Unless the NFL has been captured by some of these saying, okay, let's get your players to do these endorsements, and, you know, who knows what's going on there.
I think that's part and parcel of it, because we're talking about sponsorship, and, you know, could see the kind of ads that they put up during football games. But, okay, lest we stray into a realm that is pretty swampy. Let's get to specific questions. Questionsatdierhoffman.net is the place to go. And should we just take care of some business before we get to questions, if you don't mind?
Yes.
Let us allow one of our sponsors have an opportunity to share an important message for you. So listen up. Here goes. Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines 5 types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy 2 bottles of Revive and get 1 free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
Okay, we've got one from Jane. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My husband had his B12 level checked at his last exam, and the results were over 2,000, whereas the normal range should be under 1,200. He's been taking methyl CPG and methyl guard, which he just stopped. He'll retake his level in about 6 weeks. Is his B12 so high because of being on supplements while taking the blood test?
Yeah, I mean, typically, and I see this all the time, is that when people are taking any kind of, even just a multi, but particularly a B complex or a methyl B formula, they are going to have a high B12, which is kind of inconsequential. It's not dangerous or bad. You know, it's like high cholesterol.
Yeah.
Maybe problematic, you know, high blood pressure. Yeah. High blood sugar. Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, all these, high is bad for some things. High liver function, you know, indicative of a sick liver. But high B12 really creates any kind of problem, especially with a methylated vitamin B. So I expect that. I would ignore it. You know, if a patient came in and, you know, I were to see that on a test, I'd say, yeah, you know, keep taking your methylated B12. The problem is, sounds like they're taking 2 products that are redundant.
They are.
So, you know, methyl guard and methyl CPG are equivalent products. It's kind of like wearing a belt and suspenders. You don't need to take both. So take one or the other.
You want to do one or the other or interchange or something like that.
What's the special case for taking these? You know, some people may not have heard of this type of B vitamin. Why these instead of just an ordinary, you know, multi or B complex?
Well, this could be a case of high homocysteine.
Exactly.
Which would be greatly helped with methyl guard or methyl CPG, because you can't eat enough B6, B12, and folate in an effort to bring down homocysteine if they're, you know, if they're at levels that they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regular lab values say the normal range is below 15. We like to see it below 10, below 9.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Dr. Dale Bredesen, I think he likes to see it around 6.
Yeah, he's concerned with brain health, and we know that elevated homocysteine is associated with neurodegenerative disease susceptibility. So yes, we do want to address that with the B vitamins, and the methylated B vitamins, when combined with betaine, or sometimes referred to by its scientific name, TMG, you know, trimethylglycine, very effective for lowering homocysteine, and very, I think, really important for preserving cognitive function, especially for people. And then we get into this thing, this MTHFR, the heterogeneity of the genetic potential to methylate B vitamins. And when you have an MTHFR mutation, it's not really a mutation, it's actually just a variation, you might find it more necessary to take a body-ready methylated B vitamin than just an ordinary B vitamin, because you're not methylating efficiently.
More bioavailable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Jane says, on another note, my husband and I recently got our blood results back, and my hemoglobin A1C went from a 5.9 to a 5.7, and my husband's went from a 6.0 to a 5.6. We've been taking CM Core and Chromium.
Mm-hmm.
That helps. That certainly helps. Along with diet, Jane, you're totally on the right track.
And CM Core is an interesting formula. It is berberine, which is known to improve blood sugar, along with, I believe, grapeseed extract, which has a circulatory benefit. So it's called CM. CM is an abbreviation for cardiometabolic, and it's great for people with metabolic syndrome. Now, you may say, where the heck am I going to get these esoteric things that you're talking about? You're rattling off these names. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com, which is giving you access to Fullscript, which is a place where you can get quality vitamins from really reputable brands. Not just retail brands, but professional brands. So let's comment on those hemoglobin A1Cs. You know, what do you say, you know, it, especially these people probably, you know, they sound maybe a little older. So they go to the doctor, guy has a hemoglobin A1C of 6.1. The woman has a 5.9. The doctor says, you're fine. You're fine. What say you, Lila?
Oh, no, this is definitely the realm of pre-diabetes. Mm-hmm. In fact, Jane, your husband's going from a 6 to a 5.6 is pretty dramatic, and that's what we like to see.
Touch
He's
normal.
Just under the cutoff for pre-diabetes.
Right.
But you, Jane, going from 5.9 to 5.7, you're definitely trending in the right direction. You're still in the realm of pre-diabetes, but I know you can do better. You need to cut your carbohydrates.
Yeah, and or exercise, or maybe do some IF, intermittent fasting, timers for eating.
Intermittent fasting is, you know, powerful.
Yeah, and that'll put you into the normal range. Also, here's another important aspect to this, and I recently reviewed this in a newsletter article. Is you remember Dr. Perlmutter used to be talking about hemoglobin A1C? He used to be kind of an extremist because he wrote the book Brain Brain. You know, he's very concerned with brain health because he's a neurologist. And one of his claims was, for every 0.1 increase in your hemoglobin A1C, even in the what is called the intermediate range, you know, like 5.7, 5.9, not diabetes, not diabetes, because diabetes is 6.4 and above. For every 0.1, you got about a 10% increase in your risk of dementia. And that is actually borne out by research. He's not just making a wild claim there. So, you know, for your brain, the lower the better. And, you know, recently, I slipped a little. I went to one of my better ones was 4.9. That was, you know, about a year ago. And then most recently was 5.1. So it was okay, but it wasn't superlative.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, so our listeners know, when you do get your blood tests and you get your hemoglobin A1C checked, there are things that may raise it falsely. If you have a cold, a flu, the sniffles, the response from the body in that kind of a situation is to raise blood sugar. So you may see that reflected in your hemoglobin A1C. So I keep telling everybody, don't have your blood drawn if you have a cold or you're sick or you have an infection, because it could spray the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it is a, I'd have to look at that. It is a protein, and there's a possibility that proteins could be what are called acute phase reactants. In an inflammatory condition. But I mean, the main thing is that they are sort of a record of what's happening over the past 3 to 4 months, roughly the average life of a red blood cell. So that, you know, you can't, I mean, if you party down the night before, your blood sugar may be elevated, but your hemoglobin A1C should be only, you know, 1% affected, you know, cause it's not, it's not something, it's a cumulative thing. So You know, anemia can affect it. You know, if you are have iron deficiency anemia, because it changes your red blood cells. And some people, you know, genetically have a kind of a funky hemoglobin A1C because of the, you know, genetics associated with red blood cells. You know, I got to say that still the most reliable test for determining prediabetes is something that we used to do all the time. And it's a little cumbersome. It was, you get the patient in the lab, have them sit down, give them a sugar challenge and watch their blood sugar go up and also measure their insulin. And that's the best way. It's a little inconvenient because it's not just one blood draw. It's like several blood draws over several hours. And you can see how well they are able to bring their blood sugar back to normal, how quickly they can bring it back to normal. You can also spot reactive hypoglycemia, you know, that it goes up and then it goes precipitously down. And then you see if they're overproducing insulin or, you know, having a normal insulin response.
And that's the gold standard glucose tolerance test, the five-hour glucose tolerance test. Most people don't even make it to the 5 hours. They get to the fourth hour, and they're pretty zonked.
Yeah.
So,
It'd be interesting to see it. You know, this is also a teachable moment for people who say, I don't know, like I'm having hot flashes. I get, you know, like lightheaded. I get, you know, I have anxiety. I have panic attacks sometimes. And then in a controlled situation, we're able to replicate those feelings merely by manipulating their blood sugar. You know, it's not like we put them in a frightening situation. It's like an internal source of stress when their blood sugar, it goes way up and then way down precipitously due to a fast-acting sugar in their system.
Yeah, it's physiological stress.
Yeah.
It's not all about psychological stress. Some people think that there's maybe something wrong mentally or emotionally, but there is physiological stress that you also have to address. And once you take care of that, you'd be surprised at how you're better able to manage any psychological stress, if there is any.
Indeed.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, Jane, thank you for that. Thoughtful questions. And you and your husband are both on your way to better blood sugar. I'm very happy to hear about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. We've got an email from Frank. Any insight or help would be appreciated with the patient that has gastroparesis due to diabetes. The only treatment that was offered to her was an injection of Botox in her stomach.
Okay. So let's define what that is. Gastro means stomach, right? Paresis means paralysis. So gastroparesis means a stasis of the normal process by which the stomach empties, okay? Now, why should that occur in diabetes? Well, in diabetes, you have problems with your nerves. You have problems often affecting the nerves in your feet, and you may have problems with nerves in your penis, you know, that could cause erectile dysfunction. But it can also affect your visceral organs, not just your, you know, your extremities. It can also happen internally that it affects the nerves. And so this is usually with diabetes that's pretty poorly controlled and like insulin-dependent diabetes and with very high blood sugars over time. And so then there's a paralysis of the nerves that cause the stomach to empty. So now you might say, well, why in the heck would you treat paralysis with a paralyzing agent, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I found interesting, Botox injections.
Kind of counterintuitive, right?
How does that work? Yeah.
So what I think they're doing with this technique is they're paralyzing the muscles at the bottom of the stomach that remain kind of clamped shut. And in so doing, they allow flow through the stomach. Now, here's the problem. It's probably not a perfect solution because, you know, normally the stomach opens and closes with, you know, when the food is partially digested in the stomach, it then moves on to the next stage. Now, if you paralyze the muscles that are the outflow to the stomach, it would seem to me that the stomach would just be a pass-through and you know, things would kind of just rush through your stomach and go into your small intestine rather rapidly. And that may pose problems. That may cause what's called dumping syndrome, which is experienced by people who've had gastric bypass, for example. And so it's not, allows the food to pass through, but it's probably not the most natural physiologic solution. I know nothing about this procedure. So I'm just saying hypothetically, right? So the future is this, is that in the future, they will have, not like they have pacemakers for the heart, they will have pacemakers for the GI tract. It's already being pioneered for people with severe constipation, to induce, you know, peristalsis. It's used for people with bladder problems to enable people to, you know, urinate properly, to have, you know, bladder outflow problems. And eventually, I think they'll develop a pacemaker for your stomach. The problem is that the stomach is and the GI tract much more complicated than the heart. The heart just has to kind of squeeze down rhythmically, you know, at a certain, you know, pace. The gastrointestinal tract is, you know, has this sort of rhythmic peristalsis. It's kind of like, you know, the way that a worm moves. If you ever watch a worm, you know, traversing your flagstones on a hot day where they're trying to get back to the mud. That's the way your gastrointestinal tract works. And to send these rhythmic impulses up and down is kind of tricky, but they're working on it. And I think it's going to happen in the next decade or so, is that people with gastroparesis will be fitted with devices that will replicate normal GI motility. The word is motility, you know, and a lot of people have motility problems, as, you know, people with constipation, severe constipation over the years accumulates. And gastroparesis is one of them.
Could gastroparesis be reversed in that if it's due to diabetes, that the diabetes is well controlled, tightly controlled, even gone, you know, if it didn't require any insulin or any, I mean, we found out only recently that brain cells can regenerate, right? What about our other nerve cells? I mean, is it even possible?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you're right, hypothetically, because we know of people who have diabetic neuropathy, which gets better when their blood sugar is better controlled, and especially when we give them nutrients like alpha-lipoic acid and you know, acetyl L-carnitine, and you know, things like that. But it is unclear, you know, you know, you're asking a question that's a hypothetical. In other words, is it beyond the point of no return, the damage to the what is called the enteric nervous system, that innervates the internal organs, and can they recover? Do they have the capability of recovering? And that's a question that I think needs to be explored.
And Frank says, I've been following you for years and appreciate you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, Frank. Good pray.
It's nice to be appreciated. Thank you, Frank. You made my day. Okay, so we now have to go to part two. So give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Oh, and this comes from Nasir. Dr. Hoffman, I know you recommend olive oil, but research out of Italy indicates that even high quality olive oil in glass bottles has microplastics. What are we to do?
Okay, we'll answer Nasir's question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll take up the issue of microplastics in our food supply and when we return. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.